Hi, and welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the East Chicago Fire Department Union's rally over work shift changes, hotel developer White Lodging drops plans for a big Northwest Indiana project, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with Lake County Councilman Charlie Brown. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The East Chicago City Council supported city firefighters Monday night and voted to roll back unpopular work shift changes Mayor Anthony Copeland imposed last weekend. Council members passed by an 8-1 vote on first reading an ordinance that would return firefighters to a work schedule of 24 hours on duty and 48 hours off. Councilwoman Gilda Orange cast the lone dissenting vote. More than 100 fire union members of East Chicago and surrounding communities packed the meeting and applauded the council's action. Mayor Copeland is expected to veto the measure if council members pass it on second and final reading. They next meet December 23rd. Mayor Copeland didn't make an appearance Monday, but the fire chief Anthony Cerna did to warn council members against taking the union's part in this labor dispute. Copeland, who worked for years as a firefighter before his first election as mayor, and Cerna argued the new schedule will save thousands of dollars in overtime pay while increasing the number of firefighters available for each shift. David Matta, president of East Chicago Professional Firefighters Local 365, told council members the shifts create no savings for the public. He said they are merely retaliation against the union's political actions that would put sleep-deprived firefighters and the public at risk for no tax savings at all. Matta said he only had 7 hours sleep since the weekend. Union members have been at odds with the mayor for months over upcoming contract negotiations, claiming he refuses to meet with them. The union supported the mayor's political opponent, John Aguilera, in last spring's Democratic primary. Copeland defeated Aguilera and was reelected to a new 4-year term last month. Matta acknowledged to the council Cerna had warned the union of a possible shift change 2 months ago. Both Cerna and Matta acknowledged the mayor's offer to postpone a shift change, but Matta said the statement the mayor wanted him to sign would have taken away the union's ability to negotiate a fair labor contract. The union has chosen to work around him by negotiating a contract with the city council where they have been given a warmer reception. Cerna told the council members their involvement in labor negotiations violated state law. But the council's attorney, John Buscemi, said the council has authority to set the firefighters' work schedules and that Monday night's ordinance is valid. Council members said the dispute between the mayor, the union, and council should be resolved in the courts.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A Northwest Indiana county near Michigan and Illinois is proposing to ease the penalties for marijuana possession. Supporters say it makes sense after Michigan and Illinois legalized pot use. The Lake County Council endorsed an ordinance Tuesday that would give sheriff deputies the discretion to write tickets for possessing less than 30 grams of marijuana. Additional votes still would be necessary. The ordinance wouldn't apply to cities or towns in Lake County. County Council President Ted Bilski says officials must be, quote, fiscally responsible. He says there wouldn't be enough room in jail for pot offenders.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Consumer and environmental groups are arguing that Indiana utility regulators are unfairly shifting electricity costs from some large industrial customers to homeowners and small businesses. Their objections come after the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission approved a proposal from NIPSCO allowing six large companies to seek electricity from other sources. The commission says Maryville-based NIPSCO faces a, quote, unique business risk because it sells about 40% of its electricity to those companies, including U.S. Steel, ArcelorMittal, and BP. Opponents maintain that decision will shift between $40 million and $60 million in annual costs to other customers.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The attorney for the family of a 14-year-old boy who died after being found unresponsive in a Northwest Indiana high school's swimming pool says it has reached a legal settlement with the school's district. Attorney Chester Cameron told The Times the settlement announced Monday between the family of Curtis Walton Jr. and the Lake Ridge School Corp is a good deal for both sides, but he didn't release any terms. Walton died September 12th after being found in a Calumet High School swimming pool following football practice. Trainers tried to revive him, but he died at a Chicago hospital. Lake Ridge School's Superintendent Sharon Johnson Shirley says she's, quote, relieved by the settlement.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Authorities say a Michigan woman who was a deckhand on an oar boat has died after falling into Lake Michigan at the Port of Indiana, Burns Harbor. Indiana conservation officers say 30-year-old Sarah Murawski of Kind, Michigan, had just completed a work trip of several weeks and was on shore retrieving her belongings Monday afternoon when she fell between a dock and the boat. Officers say a witness entered the water to try and rescue Murawski, but she slipped underwater before he could reach her. Officers say a diver reached her in 32 feet of water about 45 minutes later.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A hotel developer has dropped plans for a $356 million project near one of Northwest Indiana's busiest highway interchanges after local officials balked at the company's incentive request. Maryville-based White Lodging pitched its plan last year for a complex including an event center, four hotels, an office building, and condos at U.S. 30 and Interstate 65. White Lodging spokesman says the company, founded by the late billionaire Dean White, is open to selling the site. The project stalled after the Lake County Council balked at a requested $75 million from a new 1% county food and beverage tax.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A new state program designed to combat Indiana's high infant and maternal mortality rate launches next month. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Darian Benson reports the OB Navigator program will start in 20 counties.
The program connects women early in their pregnancy with an OB Navigator, someone who provides guidance through at least the first 6 months after birth. State Health Commissioner Chris Bach says the program will be available to women on Medicaid in the highest risk counties. Bach says the program is an important step in lowering the state's infant and maternal mortality rates.
We are simply trying to identify that 40% of women across the state that may not be getting prenatal care and connecting them to the OB navigation within their own communities.
The first rollout will include Crawford, Marion, and Lake counties. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Darian Benson.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Governor Eric Holcomb will push next year to raise the minimum age to buy tobacco and vaping products from 18 to 21. That initiative is part of his 2020 agenda announced Tuesday. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Holcomb caused the move, quote, long overdue.
Health groups and the Indiana Chamber of Commerce have long pushed to raise the legal smoking age to 21 without luck. Holcomb says the sharp spike in vaping among young people helped convince him to push for the change now.
It's just horrifying to me that sixth graders are now vaping consistently, are addicted to nicotine.
To accompany that, Holcomb also wants to increase fines on irresponsible retailers.
Folks who are knowingly selling to underage users, we're going to come after you.
Holcomb won't yet call for a ban on flavored vaping products, as other states have, because he says he doesn't want to punish people who are trying to find a deterrent to smoking. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith in Terre Haute.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The National Collegiate Athletic Association has opened the door for student athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness. A lot of the discussion focuses around high-profile stars, but that's a small fraction of student athletes affected by NCAA rules. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, the proposed change by the Indianapolis-based organization would go well beyond endorsement deals.
Right now, NCAA rules prevent student athletes from making money in all kinds of ways, including profiting off their own businesses, unless they receive a waiver. Former Texas A&M cross-country athlete Ryan Trahan learned that lesson the hard way. A couple years ago, his eligibility was revoked after he promoted his water bottle company on his YouTube channel that also highlighted his time as a Division I athlete.
Basically, I have to hide the fact that I own this company that I'm so proud of and have worked so hard on. And the other option is I can promote it all I want, but I can't let anyone know that I run cross country and track for Texas A&M.
That's Trahan in one of his online videos. At the time, he said he was left with a decision he felt was unfair.
When you have to follow rules that you don't agree with and rules that you think are ethically wrong, it's just so frustrating.
Those rules could be changing. The NCAA board recently recommended an overhaul that would roll back some of the restrictions on what student athletes can earn. The NCAA, headquartered in Indianapolis, didn't respond to a request for an interview. Morgan Chall is a former college gymnast and now chairs the NCAA Division I Student Athlete Advisory Committee. With this announcement, she says athletes may not have to make the choice Trahan had to.
And what this means is, in terms of entrepreneurship and professional development, if I wanted to publish my own book or start my own business, I would be able to do so. I just wouldn't be able to accept any compensation for it so long as I'm a student athlete.
And now with social media and technology, rules made decades ago need to be updated. She says the change will not affect just elite athletes receiving endorsements. It will allow all student athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness.
Which are the issues that 98% of student athletes really face with, honestly, not even 98%, I'd say 100% of student athletes face with the current rules.
Including student athletes at the University of Evansville in Southern Indiana. The volleyball team at the Division I school plays against conference opponent Bradley University on a recent evening. Athletic Director Mark Spencer stands to the side of the court watching the game. After years of conversation about the NCAA rules, he's waiting to see a final outline of the rule change, but generally supports the concept. He says he and other athletic directors and schools want to give students a chance to create and promote their own businesses, as long as there are boundaries.
We hate having to have student athletes be separated any more than they are from being a normal student. So if normal students can profit from it, then why not the student athletes?
It will be at least many months before the rules might change. But with a growing number of states considering legislation to force the issue, many say change is inevitable. Josh Boyd is a professor at Purdue University's Brian Lamb School of Communication and has written about the NCAA and the business of amateur athletics. Boyd says the rule change will transform college sports. But he says any implementation will be complicated, and he fears it could widen the separation between student athletes in higher and lower profile sports.
And I know that's one of the things that the NCAA has talked about being a disadvantage of paying players or having any kind of compensation for athletes, is that it would widen that divide.
Morgan Chall with the Student Athlete Advisory Committee agrees and says without clear guidelines, allowing student athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness could do more harm than good.
No one's talking about how any of these proposals are going to impact limited resource institutions or historically black universities and colleges or international student athletes. And it could really limit the future opportunities for all of those groups of people.
Each of the three divisions under the NCAA will meet and establish rules within the guidelines the NCAA creates with a target start date in 2021. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Lake County Councilman Charlie Brown.
With the start of a new year with 2020 ahead, governmental agencies and units are going to be looking at starting new budgets for the calendar year. Lake County is one of those, and one of the Lake County Council members, the body that is responsible for keeping an eye on the purse strings of Lake County government, is a little concerned about how the budget process works. He has some ideas about it, and we have him with us to talk about it. Lake County Councilman Charlie Brown is with us. And Councilman Brown, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
My pleasure.
Will you take a few minutes and explain your concerns? And you'd brought this up at a recent study meeting of the County Council about maybe this being the end of a calendar year and start of pretty soon of a new budget year. It might be a good time to take a look at how the process of the budget really works.
Let me give some background.
Okay.
I spent 36 years in the Indiana General Assembly. So there was this budget for the entire state of Indiana. Now I decided that I would come down to county government. I've only been in county government 1 year. But throughout this year, there have been signs that we county government could be more efficient in A, how we spend taxpayer dollars, and B, being more cooperative and collaborative between departments and agencies. The budget for 2020 is already set. I, on yesterday, officially received permission from my colleagues to establish a committee of three with our fiscal person to look at in the future year, 2021, how we can spend tax dollars in a better manner, mainly looking at, as the budget for a given year is prepared, why not make it a true budget and look at, well, I don't need to say, or in my turn, pass my budget so I will have some money at the end of the year to take care of things I might want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Be true about the number of people, the number of equipment that I may want to purchase, etc. And it will save taxpayers money. So hopefully we can get into how we can have a better budget and budget process for future years.
Has it been, Charlie, that it's been a concern, I guess, and it seems to come up more, I guess, toward the end of the calendar year, where there may be a department that has X amount of dollars left in the budget, and they make all these little transfers of I guess, the funds that they have available in the budget. Seemingly, it comes in a big cluster at the end of the year.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we want to avoid and prevent from happening again and again.
Do you find that that there just maybe some ways in overall that you can come up with some efficiencies, I guess, for lack of a better term to call it, that in turn that department heads in Lake County government can take advantage of the money that they do have, and maybe it's a matter of procedure where the county council doesn't have to give permission for little changes to add some changes in a budget?
Well, we passed an ordinance earlier this year that indicates that if other than the personnel block, you can, and if it's $5,000 or less, you can do that internally within your department and not, quote unquote, clog up our agenda by coming in and saying, may I transfer $100 from a stamp in the telephone to another line item.
Mm-hmm.
So that has saved a lot of time, and I think even the agencies and departments appreciate that. They would have to come to get permission to move money around for any area other than personnel. But everything still has to be brought before the council in the last quarter of the year, be it personnel or transferring gas and equipment or travel or whatever during the last quarter. But first three quarters, if you want to transfer money, you can do that within your department and not come before the council for permission.
Now, I know that not every single Lake County government department goes out for grants, but if they happen to go out for a grant and they do actually receive it, how does that fit into what you want to have as far as the budget process is concerned?
Well, we approve. We have a grant manager, and he brings to us all information about grants and pending grants. The issue now becomes, how do we know we have fulfilled whatever the grant was specified for? So that's another area that we need to tighten up on. Mm-hmm. If the department sees a grant and it says you have to do ABC, before we approve renewal of that grant, especially if it requires matching funds from the county, we need to hear from that department or agency that I was supposed to accomplish ABC and I did that or I did not do that.
Now, I know that there are some instances where there are some unfunded state mandates that come down from the General Assembly in Indianapolis, and you, having been a long time state representative, you know how that seems to work.
I hear that on a regular basis from our colleagues about the manner in which the Indiana General Assembly passed down unfunded mandates. So I am the brunt of that on a regular basis, but it is unfair and unfortunate, you know, that the General Assembly says you must do something, but yet do not send funds down to accomplish that. So it has to be a process that we have some funds somewhere that we can accomplish what the General Assembly has put on us. And I think that's a part of this efficiency, that if we can save money throughout the year, then we could have some money to fund these unfunded mandates from the state.
Now, this committee that you mentioned that you're fellow county council members have approved that will start in, I guess, to take a look actually at the budget process in 2021, that this budget coming up is pretty much set and isn't going to go into effect here. What do you hope that you'll be able to do, at least maybe in the meantime, for 2020, until you're able to get the committee going in the following year?
The president, Ted Bielski, has appointed me the chair of this committee. Mm-hmm. My two colleagues that will join me on the committee are Councilwoman Chris Sid and Councilman Dan Grinnell. Along with them, he also officially appointed our fiscal manager, Scott Small, to join us in looking and trying to bring back to the council what we specifically recommend so that we can save money and or get more cooperation between departments on how they can save money by sharing a computer or buying computers in bulk. We feel that there are many, many ways that have not just been explored as to how we can save money.
So you think that at least in the year 2020, you can get ready for the committee and just, I guess, kind of tighten up the efficiencies as you can during this year coming up here until you get to the committee and review a 2021 budget?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it won't be easy because these are our fellow elected officials, and they are probably saying, why can't I do what I want to do to run my department or agency?
Yeah.
But we have, and it's not just county government, all forms of government, I think, work in silos and just want to do the things within their department, not know what the impact is on fellow elected official or department.
Do you think this is going to work perhaps in other areas of Lake County government, that other department heads are going to take a look at this idea and figure that it may not be a bad idea? We'll try it out.
They may take a look at it and say it's not a bad idea, and I think we should try it all.
Well, Councilman Brown, thank you for spending time with us to talk about this. We hope that this may maybe kind of be infectious. Maybe other Northwest Indiana counties will take a look at this procedure if they haven't done so already, and maybe they'll take it up themselves at some point in time. We appreciate you talking about it today. We've been talking with Lake Lake County Councilman Charlie Brown.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.